Universal. A black and white picture of a shimmering lake, conifers in the background. A boy runs down a jetty and leaps into the lake. Lakeshore Entertainment. A Joel B. Michaels production in association with Samuels Media. A VPI Median Fond 3 Half-Light co-production in association with Rising Star, a Craig Rosenberg film. A close-up view of canal water. In the background, a purple and pink barge. Demi Moore, Half-Light. The view rotates to reveal a wooden deck, a brick wall festooned in autumnal leaves, and a punt. Hans Matheson. James Cosmo. Henry Ian Cusick. Further back still, a Georgian-style house with a second-floor balcony encased in a wrought iron railing. Kate Izzet. A close-up of typewriter keys indenting paper. Teresa Bradley. Baby pictures crowd a wall. Casting by John and Roz Hubbard. Superimposed award certificates. One reads the winner of a CWA Gold Dagger for fiction is The Darkening Seas, then winner Rachel Carlson, line producer Guy Tannehill, composer Brett Rosenberg, costume designer Ruth Myers. A close-up of the typewriter mechanism, another award, CWA Silver Dagger awarded to The Scream Thief by Rachel Carlson, a newspaper headline, No Laptop for Rachel, editor Bill Murphy, a picture of Rachel Carlson with a baby, photos of the baby boy as he grows. Hardback copies of The Scream Thief translated into a range of languages. From below, hands hit the typewriter keys. Director of photography, Ashley Rowe. Executive producer, Andreas Schmidt. Character profiles handwritten on white-lined card. Produced by Clive Parsons and Andreas Grosch. Produced by Steve Samuels. Brunette Rachel Carlson types ponderously at a glass-top desk adorned with vases and a framed photo of her and her son. The table is in a large bay window. A toy commando astride a dune-style buggy careers around. Produced by Joel B. Michaels and Garth H. Drabinski. Written and directed by Craig Rosenberg. A man enters a long hallway. On a glass-top table lie a pile of letters. The man drops his keys and examines them. He is a thin-faced 40-something with wavy dark hair. He tears open a business letter. The header reads, Pan Macmillan.
Gangrene! Mute!
Lightbulb! Rachel's son Thomas is coaxing the commando up the banister railing.
Hey, Thomas.
Hi, Brian.
How was school, eh?
Fine.
The man, Brian, manages a weak smile. His face turns serious as he climbs the stairs. The buggy whizzes into the room where Rachel is typing. It bumps into her feet. She looks down and grins.
Time's up, you slime ball. Ugh. Let's go outside.
I'm almost done.
Come on, Mom. You promised.
I know, and I am a terrible mother.
You're horrible.
Horrible?
You're dreadful.
Dreadful? Ugh. Well, I'm gonna be horrible, and I'm gonna be dreadful if I don't finish this chapter. So, I need at least 5 minutes.
Three.
Four.
Theodore, escape me outside!
Rachel returns to her typing. A close-up of the framed photo of her and Thomas. Thomas makes a beeline for the fridge in the kitchen, where he plucks a magnetic tea from the door.
Hey.
Hey. What'd they say?
Not interested.
What do they know? They rejected my first novel anyway.
It's Tabitha King syndrome. Stephen King's wife. She's a good enough writer, but no one knows her. All they know is Stephen King.
Brian rubs Rachel's shoulders.
He'll know you one day. Not Look at all the help you've given me.
It's editing, darling. It's not the same thing. See, not sufficiently mysterious for a mystery, nor sufficiently thrilling for a thriller.
You know, it wouldn't be the worst thing to add a few thrills and resubmit it.
What? Throw in some more blood? Psychopath jumping out of the closet with an axe. That's not the English tradition. Our thrillers have style, wit, imagination.
Darling, you have wit?
Very good.
You're the best editor in London. Is that so bad? Max Perkins saved Hemingway.
Yes, well, no one remembers Max Perkins. He's right up there with Tabitha What's-Her-Face.
Well, I couldn't have done any of this without you.
Well, you do realize, darling, that... that I'm supposed to be saying that to you.
On a crestfallen Rachel, she lowers her eyes.
Hey, when can I read some?
About 3 minutes. That's all Thomas has given me.
Okay. 3 minutes it is.
Outside the house, Thomas traipses into the concrete backyard, which is festooned with plants. He leans over the railing and gazes at the canal. Rachel types on. She picks up her wristwatch and checks the time. Thomas plays with his commando by the railing. He twists the toy over and over. He bounces it along the railing. It drops from his hand. He squeezes between a tree and the railing to retrieve it. He spies an open lock with an ice cream charm dangling from it. He mock types across the railing top as Rachel types in her room. Thomas opens the gate leading down to the punt and the canal. Meanwhile, Rachel, task done, trots down the stairs. She grabs a stripy apron from a hook, fastens it around her midriff, and considers the magnetic letters on the kitchen fridge. The message reads, "Thomas was here." In the backyard, Thomas strolls up to the punt. Upstairs, Brian reads Rachel's manuscript. He gets up and heads for the sideboard, where he spots a newspaper clipping. Record $4 million deal for thriller novelist Rachel Carlson. Inside a see-through folder, more clippings chronicling Rachel's rise to fame. The headlines read Writer wins with debut novel, American author moves to London, and touched on top, Rachel Carlson still heads bestseller list after 4 months. Downstairs, Rachel chops tomatoes and then iceberg lettuce. A framed photo of a woman and Rachel posing side by side. Brian studies it. He pulls out one of her hardback books. He examines the jacket. In the kitchen, Rachel adds dressing to the salad, which is now in a wooden bowl. She carries a chopping board to a side work surface. Outside, Thomas plunges the commando into the leafy water. From beneath the water, Thomas circles the commando. From beneath the pan water, Rachel drops spaghetti in the pan. Thomas stares intently into the canal water. Rachel tests the pan water. Thomas ponders, raising his hand to his mouth. Rachel pours out 2 glasses of red wine. Thomas gazes at his reflection. Rachel discards the pan water through a colander which is in the sink. The spaghetti flops into the colander. Thomas draws in the water, rippling his reflection.
Brian, dinner's ready.
Yeah, coming.
Brian rereads his rejection letter. Rachel saunters out to fetch Thomas.
Thomas?
She pokes her head outside. No Thomas.
Thomas!
She turns and sees the wrought iron gate leading to the punt unlocked. Her face falls. She leans around the tree. The ice cream cone charm dangles from the key. The lock is unfastened. The boardwalk leading to the punt is empty. An anxious Rachel steps nervously onto the boardwalk.
Thomas? Thomas?
Rachel quickens her pace as she approaches the decking. The decking, like the boardwalk, is deserted.
Thomas?
Rachel walks back along the boardwalk. She spies Thomas's commando in the water. She kneels down and plucks the commando out. She gazes at the plastic doll, then wills herself to stare into the water. She pushes the wooden punt to one side. Underneath, her son floats face down in the water.
Thomas! No!
She hauls the boy's lifeless body out.
Brian!
She opens the boy's mouth and clumsily attempts CPR.
Come on! Breathe! Brian!
She continues to perform CPR on Thomas, who does not move. The picture goes into slow motion as the distraught Rachel tries to revive her son before finally grabbing hold of him in grief. On the sobbing Rachel as she holds her dead son tight. An aerial view of Rachel weeping, Thomas dangling in her arms. A view of the houses and the slate grey sky. Day, the Scottish Highlands. A car drives the winding road. On through fields and wooded land the car goes. The car climbs up the road into the Scottish hills. Rachel drives a single-track lane by the coast. A rainbow peeps from a leaden sky. Rachel pulls the car up and gazes down to the cove below. A white cottage nestles just above the shoreline. A drawn Rachel focuses on it.
I searched every website. This is everything you want. It's remote, quiet, no one around for miles.
English Cove.
You'll get so much writing done. Look, it's even got the boats we used in Suffolk. Do you know how long you might want it for?
I don't know. Just whatever it takes for me to finish this book. It looks great.
Well, Brian hasn't been any help.
He should have been there for you.
Yeah,
well, he tried. Look, whatever we had, we lost a long time ago.
Yeah, I know. But are you really going to be okay out there, all by yourself? It's only been 8 months.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Rachel packs an Etch-a-Sketch into the plastic storage box.
Would you like to get some tea?
Yeah.
On the worried blonde, Sharon, she follows her to the kitchen, closing the bedroom door. The commando drops on the floor and speaks. The house by the sea. Stairs lead away from the house to a wooden jetty. Rachel drives to the entrance. She gets out and surveys the house and beach view. She approaches the porch, key in hand. She unlocks the door. Inside, a cluttered kitchen merges into a sitting room complete with rocker and an easy chair swathed in a lilac throw. Rachel makes the little round table placed in front of a window with a sea view. Later, Rachel places her typewriter on the table. She throws her handbag on the couch. A little later, she switches the typewriter's position, then drags the flimsy chair to face it. A little later still, she repositions the typewriter. She drags the chair back to its original position. She shovels in her seat. She paces the room and stares, hands on hips. On Rachel, emptying her toothbrush and paste into a container, she fills a cabinet with toiletries. She finds a pill bottle in her toiletries bag, a flashback to Rachel being handed the pills by a lanky doctor.
If you're really going to go, take these with you.
You know, I was wanting to try it without it for a while, Robert.
It's just in case.
Rachel fingers the bottle. Brian sits silently next to her.
Rachel.
Brian and Rachel lock eyes.
Should I call Bartlett?
I'm not up for divorce lawyers right now. Let's just deal with all that when I get back.
The lift doors close. A man stops the lift and the doors reopen. Rachel eavesdrops.
So how'd it go? Not all this time. She's never talked to me about Thomas. She won't open up to me at all. You've got to remember, it's not the same for you. Not because he's not my son. Because you weren't the one who left the gate open.
The lift door snaps shut. Back in the cottage, a grim-faced Rachel puts the pills on the shelf. Later on the porch...
Hello?
Rachel, how are you?
You should see where I am right now.
You're there already.
It's beautiful. And there's not another house around for miles.
They said there was a lighthouse there as well?
Mm-hmm.
You've got one in your book, haven't you?
You can do some research.
It's perfect. It's exactly what I wanted. If I can't write here, I can't write anywhere.
Ah, at least you're not stuck writing crap. For a crap paper.
Like I am?
It's not that bad. It keeps the bills at bay. Almost. Yeah, which is good for you. Which I don't need reminding.
Hey, remember, if you want me to come out
there, you just say the word.
Thanks,
I'm gonna be okay. I really think I'm gonna be okay.
Rachel hikes up a track in the hillside next to the house. A stone cottage. A middle-aged couple paint a newly constructed bridge over a stream.
Excuse me. Am I headed the right way into town?
Sorry?
Am I...
Rachel clambers down the embankment to greet Finlay Murray.
Am I headed the right way into town?
Yeah, just follow up the beach. You can't miss it.
Okay. Wasn't sure.
You travelling through?
Oh, no. Actually, I just moved into Foster Road, number one.
Foster Road, number one? You sure?
I think so. It's the only house on the road.
Yeah, that's it. I'm Finlay Murray. What passes for a police sergeant round here?
And I'm Mary.
Hello, Rachel Carlson.
So you're here on your own?
Yeah.
Well, if you hang on, I'll give you a lift in. It's a wee bit of a hike.
Thank you, but this is what I'm here for.
You sure?
Absolutely. Okay. To the beach.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Rachel climbs up stone steps into a wood. She strolls past a sign, Inganish Cove, population 128. On the beach, she heads for a collection of stone houses, nestling in an inlet. She passes moored boats. She averts her gaze from three children building sandcastles. A silver-haired man passes by and nods. She returns the gesture. A red-headed youth sweeps the pathway outside the inn. She climbs the steps onto a pedestrian walkway. Behind her, two swings. One flaps in the breeze.
Your son's waiting for you. On the swings. He's been waiting for you. He told me.
My son?
The blonde studies Rachel, then the empty swings.
Oh, I'm sorry. It must have been someone else's little boy.
The blonde gets up from the bench. Rachel scrutinises her.
Wait, can I talk to you?
I was mistaken, that's all.
The blonde fixes her with a stare, then smiles.
It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
Rachel directs her gaze at the swing as it pendulums in the breeze. A post-it note with story development, characters, relationships on it. Rachel sticks up other post-its with relationship intrigue, confrontation, and develop Amy's relationship with James on them. Finally, she sticks up a picture of a lighthouse on Rachel as she fans out her lined cards. She spreads them out on the table. She stares at the blank sheet, a tabula rasa in her typewriter. She strokes the keys. Nothing comes to mind.
Mom, we're escaping outside. Come with us. You promised, but you never came.
Rachel stares at her son in the doorway. Thomas walks away. Rachel covers her face in despair. The boat makes a beeline for the lighthouse on the stony outcrop. Rachel steers the boat into the small jetty. She climbs the rusty steps to the stone pathway. She takes snapshots of the beach with its wooden stakes jutting out. She admires a pack of horses cantering on the beach. She draws closer and kneels to take pictures. She traverses the rocky grassland below the lighthouse and gets on bended knee for a shot of the lighthouse. A man in a mock barber with a fish in his hand approaches her.
It's impressive, don't you think?
Oh, quite. I didn't realise that there was anyone else around.
Carry on. Lighthouses are a dying breed.
Rachel drags her coat on. The bearded youth clutches a fishing rod. He wipes his hand on his jacket.
I'm Angus McCullough. A lighthouse keeper.
Rachel. I'm sorry, I just assumed that all lighthouses were automated now.
Well, most of them are. In a few years, I'll be gone too. So what brings you out here?
I'm researching lighthouses for a book.
It's a long way from America just to see a lighthouse.
No, I live in London, actually. I'm just out here doing some writing.
Oh, you're in the cottage. It's about time someone moved in. It's been empty for years. Well, you've certainly come to the right place to write a book. Did you meet the horses yet? That's a story for you. A Spanish galleon shipwrecked right there, 1754. The entire crew died. But a few horses swam here to safety. And they've been here ever since.
And they've never been off the island?
I can think of worse.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm just putting some dinner on. You're welcome to stay, have something to eat. I can tell you everything you need to know about lighthouses.
Thanks, I need to get back. I'm still unpacking boxes.
Well, look, maybe next week, same time. I'll cook some extra, and if you don't show, I'll eat with the horses. We should be friends. We're neighbors now.
We should.
Later, Rachel prizes open the plastic storage box. She lowers her gaze to the etch-a-sketch of a rocket orbiting the Earth. Underneath, Thomas's commando toy and the magnetic letters. She takes the letters out of their container and places them randomly on the fridge door. She lifts up the etch-a-sketch. Instead of the rocket, there is a message in childish scrawl. Don't forget, look behind you. She spins around, facing her tense reflection in a mirror. She lets the etch-a-sketch tumble to the floor. She slowly bends down and picks it up. The etch-a-sketch is blank. Outside the house, the waves crash against the shore as the light fades. Inside, the typewriter lies unused, the chair empty. The sheet of paper is blank. Rachel sits on a box seat staring at the typewriter. Her eye catches a blue-bound book on a shelf. She leans over and picks it up. She examines the spine, then opens it.
To my love, in honor of what we decided yesterday, forever yours, Kay.
She flips through the leaves.
Page 145, line 7.
A photo of a smiling couple.
Today I begin to understand what love must be, if it exists. When we are parted, we each feel the lack of the other half of ourselves. We are incomplete, like a book in two volumes, of which the first has been lost. This is what I imagine love to be. Incompleteness in absence.
On Rachel pensive, she closes the book, leaving the photo where she found it. Night, the waves lap the shore, the bed is unruffled. Rachel lies asleep, hunched over the desk.
I'll get you wherever you are!
A sleepy Rachel raises her head. Outside, Thomas traipses past the window. Rachel, now wide awake, leaps up in time to see her son descend the steps to the jetty. She hurries onto the porch. Her son stands at the very edge of the jetty. Rachel descends the steps. Thomas remains standing with his back to her. She edges along the jetty, her breathing shallow.
Thomas?
Thomas does not acknowledge her. As Rachel draws near, she notices the commando toy in his hand.
Thomas?
Thomas turns.
Mama?
She flings her arms around him.
It's okay, Mom.
Don't go.
I won't.
She holds her son close.
Come, be with me.
She fixes Thomas with a horrified stare. His angelic face beams back. He grips her and plunges her into the icy sea. He tugs and tugs, trying to drag her into the depths. Rachel jerks awake from her nightmare. She gasps and recoils. She gradually steadies her erratic breathing. She freezes as she hears breathing right next to her. Thomas leaps forward and tries to strangle her. Rachel gasps. The apparition has vanished. A terrified Rachel tries to calm herself. She wills herself to turn her head once more. The room is empty. Morning. On the typewriter, still with a blank sheet pinned in it. Rachel deposits her mug and strokes the tabletop. She glances up at the lighthouse on the outcrop. She holds her gaze. Her eyes drop to the blank page. Rachel strides up to the lighthouse entrance. She approaches to the sounds of clattering. She peeks in at the lighthouse window. Angus is struggling with fish in a frying pan.
Hello.
You turned up at last. Good timing, I'm just burning the fish. It's good to see you. How's your research coming?
Well, it's all right. Could be better. That's why I'm here. I was hoping I could get a tour.
Okay. How about some lunch before the tour?
Is there anything else on the menu?
On the beach.
Why is it that everyone paints their boats the exact same color as their houses?
Well, that's actually a tradition here. The wife needs to be able to look out on the water and know her husband's okay.
It's very romantic.
And we also get a tax break on the paint. Which is also very romantic.
Very romantic.
Waves crash against the rocks which protrude out of the sea.
Do you ever get lonely working out here?
You never get lonely sitting at your typewriter?
Sometimes.
I like being alone.
Do you really like it? Or do you think it's just something you've gotten used to?
Well, maybe I like it because I've gotten used to it.
I love it out here.
Who do you talk to?
Who do you talk to? Isn't that what you love about writing? The solitude.
I write because... well, I don't function very well as a human being unless I'm writing.
Well, what are you writing now?
I'm not.
Rachel brushes back her windswept hair and walks on past him.
Don't tell me you paint as well.
Oh, no. Kate, my wife. We haven't seen each other for a long time.
She loved it out here at first. But in the end, the isolation was too much for her. Loneliness can make you a little crazy, I think.
They smile at each other.
Come on.
Rachel follows Angus to where the spiral stairs ascend into the heavens.
Wow. Kate could never understand why I wouldn't leave here. But my father lived here. And his father before him.
Angus mounts the stairs.
My great-grandfather. He built the balcony from wood that was washed ashore from a shipwreck. This is him.
Angus points to a black and white photo.
I could never leave here. You'll see why. Come on.
They climb yet higher. Chains hang down. From outside the lighthouse, Angus and Rachel walk past a window. A rotating view of the very top as Angus opens the door. Rachel appears onto the top balcony to soak up the panorama before her. At the boat, Rachel lifts up a storage hatch and plucks out a hardback copy of one of her books.
Oh, by the way, I've brought you something as a thank you for the tour. It's one of my books. I had it
Thanks.
Sent.
Dreamers Awake by Rachel Carlson. I'm impressed. Is it a comedy or a tragedy?
Well, it's a mystery. But please be kind. It is the first novel I have published.
Well, I'll find out all about you.
Maybe.
She starts up the motor.
If you need any help, just send out a flare. I'll keep an eye out for you.
Thank you. I really enjoyed that today.
Aye. Me too.
Rachel smiles and waves goodbye as she steers the boat away. Angus watches her go. Night, in the cottage. Rachel carries a book into the bedroom. In the distance, the lighthouse lights flick on and off. Rachel turns her lights on and off in acknowledgement. Day, a field of golden billowing grass. Rachel and Angus saunter along the beach. Rachel stretches her arms out against the wind. From a distance, she fingers a shell. Angus and her examine it. They walk past the crashing waves. Day, Rachel heads towards the jetty in her motorboat. Angus waits for her. Angus and Rachel mount a horse on the beach. Angus gallops the horse the length of the beach. The horse's pace slows to a gentle trot. Rachel hugs Angus's back.
So, have you slept with him yet?
It's just nice to have someone to talk to.
Meaning you haven't slept with him?
You know, you're starting to sound like you're conducting a tabloid interview, my friend.
You know me, always working, always looking for the angle.
And you know I rely on you for my kicks.
Is that the sea I can hear?
Yes, it's less than 10 feet away. You hear the crashing?
Well, look at you.
Number one bestsellers, waves at your feet, romance on a deserted island. Tough life. Rachel, I'm sorry. That came out wrong.
Sharon, forget it.
It's okay. Look, I wouldn't have made it
this far without you. I mean it.
I'll call you tomorrow, okay?
Okay.
A breezy overcast day, Rachel and Angus pick their way towards a ruin.
Okay, don't peek.
Rachel sets her camera to automatic and places it on the wall.
Quick, 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 quick!
Huh?
Quick, quick!
Ready?
Smile!
Okay.
The camera flashes. Rachel's dazzling smile fades as Angus goes to retrieve it. A flashback of a photo opportunity as Rachel hugs her son on the bench at their home.
Smiling?
Yes.
Promise?
Yes. You promise?
The camera flashes. Rachel smothers her son in kisses.
Rachel, you okay?
Rachel?
On a perplexed Angus.
Something wrong. What's wrong?
I think I need to get back.
Why?
They lock eyes. Rachel shakes her head.
I'm sorry.
Out at sea, Rachel's boat heads homeward. A graveyard on the clifftop. Rachel strolls along the path next to the graves. A curly-haired man pins a notice to the church board.
Afternoon, Rachel.
Afternoon.
Are we going to see you here on Sunday?
I don't think so. Your man and I aren't on very good terms.
Ah, don't you worry about that. All the more reason to come.
Your cross is broken.
I know. It's this weekend's chore.
At the cove, the strawberry blonde, Morag, sits on the swing. In the inn, Rachel twirls a near-empty pint glass. Rachel sups the remainder of the beer. Morag enters.
It's the gate, isn't it? What? Why you're so sad? You left the gate open.
A view of Rachel facing Morag, and then a shot of a grim-faced Rachel stood before the gate. She touches the ironwork. Morag stands in front of her.
You haven't been able to go out there since he died, have you?
All right, ready? All right, here we go.
A long shot of Rachel setting up the flash photo.
He's beside you, your son. He's dripping wet. He follows you everywhere. He's trying to hold your hand.
From below, Rachel extends her hand. She lets go of the beer glass, which smashes on the floor. Morag scurries off. Finlay Murray goes to help.
What you been saying? More of a psychic mumbo-jumbo. Listen, don't worry, she'll say anything to get somebody to talk to her. Watch your fingers. Jim, get us up this pan and brush.
A napkin on the counter. On it, a message which reads Mill Cottage, Hafey Lane. A close-up of a doll's face.
Yes, yes, I can hear her. I'm not answering.
Is anybody here?
I should never have gone to see her.
Rachel hammers on Mill Cottage's door. A discouraged Rachel leaves.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm not listening.
Morag mends a doll.
You can keep talking, but I'm not listening. I'm not getting out of this chair for the love of God or money.
The chair opposite is empty.
I can't save her. I can't save anyone. Things are going to get worse.
Night. Rachel is back in the cottage. She flicks on the light. She goes to the fridge with the jumbled-up plastic letters fixed to the door. She retrieves a half-full wine bottle. When she shuts the door, the letters are arranged to read Thomas was here. Rachel steps shakily back. At the lighthouse, a drenched Rachel hammers on the glass as she shivers outside the door.
Rachel, come in.
I think I could be getting messages from him.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe the dead miss us even more than we miss them.
I've replayed it so many times. If I'd only gone out to play with them. Like I said, I would that this never would have happened. And I keep thinking in the water, struggling, and I wasn't there. I'm the mother. I'm supposed to be there to protect him, and I wasn't. I came here thinking that I could write and that everything would be okay, and you know what? It's not okay. It's not okay, and I'm not okay.
Rachel.
Angus cups her face in his hands. He brushes his thumb across her lips. He caresses her face, leans forward and kisses her. Rachel and Angus naked and in a tight clinch. They kiss deeply and clasp hands. Rachel caresses his face. They stroke each other's skin. Rachel arches her back as they make love. Day. The sea splashes against the shoreline. In the lighthouse, Angus places a tape in the radio tape deck.
What is this?
It's an old Celtic ballad. Kayaks and Sturm. Girl in the storm.
It's beautiful.
Rachel and Angus lie facing each other.
I finished your book.
Did you learn all about me?
Maybe.
They smile.
Here.
Angus picks up an object from the windowsill.
I made something for you. To inspire you.
He hands her a miniature wooden boat. Out on the pathway, Angus embraces Rachel gently from behind.
I'll leave a key out for you.
Angus leaves a key on an upper ridge.
So you can come up whenever you want to. In case I'm out fishing or something.
They saunter to the beach where the wooden stakes pierce the sand. Rachel stoops to pluck a shell from the sand.
Look. It's mother of pearl. I love these. Do you know the old Celtic legend about them?
About those?
Yeah. Come on.
She jogs to a spot by the wooden stakes.
Well, first, we have to bury it together.
Angus looks on.
Together.
Right.
And then, if one of us ever returns and digs it up, then...
Then we were meant for each other?
Well, actually, I don't know because I just made it.
Very Celtic of you.
You know, I was thinking that exact same thing. Do you know Mary, Finlay's wife? She's having a little birthday thing in the village tomorrow, and, you know, I was thinking that maybe you'd like to go.
Rachel averts her gaze momentarily before focusing on him.
I'd love to go.
So, like, 2 o'clock?
Two.
Rachel lowers herself onto the rusty steps.
Hey, Rachel.
He bends over to kiss her softly.
I'll see you tomorrow.
He hands her the shoulder bag. She steers the boat from the jetty and turns to hold up 2 fingers, signifying the rendezvous time.
2, right?
He waves an acknowledgement. They wave to each other once more. Back at the cottage, Rachel creeps inside. The fridge magnet letters are all jumbled again. Rachel removes all the post-it notes and hurls them in the bin. She places a miniature boat on top of her post-its. She reflects for a moment, then types.
She lay there. In the half-light of the cabin, unable to sleep. In the morning, she told him she had... Well, there were still some limits to the things she could say to him then.
Angus sleeps.
But most of the night, she watched his eyelids and his lips and his face.
At the church.
And in the stillness, she felt peace.
Rachel tiptoes up the aisle and takes a seat. At Mary Murray's party, Rachel makes a beeline for the frivolities at the inn. A crowd mills around. Children skip on the beach. Rachel adjusts her scarf and strides up. She weaves her way through the throng. She approaches the Murrays.
Thank you. Happy birthday. That's so sweet of you. Thanks very much. Would you like a drink? A lager. It's on the way.
Mm-hmm. children play football on the beach. Rachel sits cross-legged on the stone wall and sups her lager. She gazes expectantly along the deserted beach. She checks her watch, 2:30. Mary blows out the solitary candle on the sponge cake. Still no sign of Angus. Rachel wanders into the inn. Rachel slips into the lounge bar, searching for Mary.
Excuse me, Mary. I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm meeting a friend here, Angus McCulloch. I thought you might have seen him.
What are you talking about?
Well, he was supposed to be here an hour ago. The lighthouse keeper.
I know who he is. What does he look like, your Angus?
Dark hair, nice blue eyes.
Aye, that sounds like Angus. But I've not seen him these 7 years. And neither have you, because he's dead.
No, there must be some mistake.
Oh, he's dead, all right. Him and the wife. I chose the dress we buried her in.
No, you're kidding, right?
On astounded Mary, a deathly silence falls.
Reverend, you've been out to the lighthouse, haven't you?
No, not for years. Nobody goes out there anymore.
But you know Angus McCulloch.
I used to, aye, but he's been dead for 7 years.
Is this a joke?
Rachel, this isn't funny. People here don't laugh about this.
The crowd stare her out in utter amazement. Rachel looks around in disbelief.
What is this? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this?
Rachel shakes her head and hurries from the inn. The silent party crowd give her daggers as she leaves.
Jaya Kerora.
Sakam. Amonichmi.
Hila Koyata Triya Hila.
The lighthouse at dusk. Rachel ties up her boat at the jetty. She clambers up. She finds a frayed rope where Angus's boat should be. She marches up to the lighthouse. The light at the very top rotates, spreading its beacon along the coast. Rachel goes up to the door and knocks on the glass. She shields her face against the light and tries to peer inside. She reaches up to the ridge where Angus placed the key. Nothing. The door swings open of its own accord. She creeps inside.
Angus?
The place is deserted. The cupboards and surfaces are empty. No vestige of human habitation. Rachel opens the fridge, likewise empty.
Loneliness can make you a little crazy, I think.
She traipses through the uninhabited room. She runs her fingers through her hair, bewildered.
Kate could never understand why I wouldn't leave here. But my father lived here. And his father before him.
A flashback of Angus by the stairs. She gazes up at the staircase. The chains hang along with a hook.
I could never leave here.
Rachel circles the room.
Maybe the dead miss us, even more than we miss them.
A flashback of Angus and Rachel by the fire, of them making love. Rachel creeps into the long, deserted bedroom.
Rachel.
What are you doing here?
You're going to stir up trouble.
I came to look for Angus.
Angus McCulloch is dead and buried. I saw him jump off that cliff over there.
I was with him right here last night.
You couldn't have been. 7 years ago, I came out to visit Angus, just as I had done dozens of times before.
Finlay turns to the kitchen, recalling the scene.
There was a tape playing, Calix and Sturm, Angus's favourite song. I found Kate inside.
Kate spread-eagled on the kitchen floor, by her head, a pool of blood.
Angus came home early from the village. Caught in bed with a local fisherman. Gordon MacLeod. Had been going on for months. Angus was the only one that didn't know anything about it. I caught a glimpse of him through the window.
Angus floats by the window.
I followed him up to the balcony, but it was too late.
They walk out onto the balcony.
I felt for him. We all did. We just worshipped Kate. When he caught up with Gordon, he must have just snapped.
Gordon hung up by the hook.
I had all this from Kate. She lived long enough to tell me that Angus didn't kill her.
Kate strikes her head on piping.
She came between them in the struggle. Just before she died, she prayed that Angus would forgive her. We all knew what was going on. Nobody said anything. Those three deaths are as much in our hands as they are in his.
It just can't be the same man. I can prove he was here.
Rachel opens the cottage door.
Can just get this film developed. There's a photo of us together, and
the camera is empty.
I must have just misplaced the film somewhere.
You couldn't have met anyone out there.
He also did a carving for me that
Rachel
was right here.
Rachel, nobody goes out there anymore. The lighthouse was automated after the murder, so we wouldn't have to. And nobody's lived in this house since then, either.
What do you mean, this house?
Well, this was Gordon MacLeod's house. He and Kate used to signal each other with lights when Angus was away.
Rachel snatches up the blue-bound book. She scrabbles through the book and finds the photo. She holds it up, passes it to Finlay. The photo of the smiling couple.
Is he, you mean?
A flashback of Kate in a pool of blood. Of Gordon hung on the hook.
This just doesn't make any sense. I've been with him practically every day this last month. We've eaten together, we've walked on the beach, we've been with the horses. It's not like I've been out there talking to myself all this time.
If you've been flirting with Angus MacCulloch, who's that buried at Inganish Cemetery?
At the church graveyard. Rachel hunts amongst the tombstones. She weaves around the stones, checking the inscriptions. She reaches two grey tombstones. One inscription reads Kate McCulloch, born January 2, 1967, died February 12, 1998. The other reads Angus McCulloch, born January 5, 1963, died February 12, 1998. A hand reaches out and touches her shoulder.
You didn't believe us, eh?
I don't know what to believe anymore. You still haven't fixed the cross.
No. No, I haven't.
Rachel stumbles away.
It's this weekend's chore.
She stops and stares at him. On the vicar smirking. Later, Rachel spins through the microfiche newspaper collection. She arrives at Wednesday, February the 11th, 1998. She scrolls to the next date, Wednesday, 25th of February, 1998. She gapes in disbelief.
Excuse me. You have some newspapers missing on the microfilm.
It's a miracle we have any there at all. What are you looking for?
Anything around February 12th or 13th, 1998.
The McCulloch murder. Kids probably pinched them. Gory murders. Kids love them.
What about internet access?
Ayuna. El fin me quedé escucho. The computer's been fixed. Sorry?
Rachel glances between the two women.
Look, I just need anything that has a photo of Angus McCulloch.
Try Ellapool Public Library.
The librarian goes about her business and ignores Rachel. She glances up at her as Rachel leaves. Rachel snaps her mobile closed. The librarians observe her.
He wasn't there.
No. I don't understand. His stuff, his boat, something must have been there.
No, nothing was there. It was like he never existed.
There must be some explanation.
Yeah. Heck, I'm losing it. That's the explanation. Maybe I shouldn't have come.
Have you spoken to Robert?
No.
Maybe he was right and I shouldn't have gone off the medication.
Rachel, just come home. Just get out of there and come back.
You know what, maybe I did imagine Angus. He seemed so perfect. And there isn't anything that perfect.
Is there?
Listen, I'm coming to you. I'll get on the next plane and I'll be there in a few hours. You just sit tight. You stay there, okay?
Okay.
I'll see you soon.
Rachel lowers the mobile slowly. She raises her hand to her head. Her reflection strokes her hair and brings her hand down. A terrified Rachel gapes, dumbstruck. She lowers her hand, a close-up of a haggard Rachel. A tear runs down her face. The view pivots on Rachel's face. revealing her reflection. She stretches out and touches the glass. She exhales as she feels a solid glass against her fingertips. Night, the cottage is illuminated. Rachel slouches at the desk and hammers repetitively on one typewriter key. A string of A's appears on the blank page. Row after row of A's, the typewriter pings. She pushes the bar across. Something outside the window catches her eye. The lighthouse lights flick on and off. Rachel gazes at the lights. She makes a beeline for the lighthouse entrance. The door is open and the place deserted as before. She hurries to the spiral staircase. She mounts the stairs. She stops. She stoops and feels water on the fourth step. Sodden footprints. The door at the top crashes open. Rachel jogs up the stairs to the very top. She arrives at the balcony. In front of her, a man in a dark coat stares out to sea.
Rachel! What are you doing here? I knew you'd be here!
The man has vanished.
Rachel! Come down and meet me inside!
Rachel glances at Sharon, then the empty space. She hurries to meet her.
Sharon, he's here. Angus.
What?
He was on the balcony. I saw him, then I saw you, and then he was gone.
You didn't see him.
You didn't see anything. Your mind is playing tricks on you.
No, no, no.
Come on, let's go home.
Rachel's eye catches a shape in the doorway.
Sharon, he's right there, in the doorway.
There's no one there.
Turn around.
I'm not going to turn around. I'm not buying into this fantasy. There's nobody there. Listen to me. I want you to do something for me. Close your eyes. Do this. Close your eyes, and when you open them again, he'll be gone. You have to do this. You make him go away now, and he'll never come back again. Close your eyes. Close your eyes.
Rachel closes her eyes.
And now he'll be gone.
Rachel opens them. Angus sidles out of the doorway and advances towards them.
He's coming towards us.
Sharon smiles as Angus moves ever closer.
Right behind you.
Rachel spins Sharon around, who stares through the Angus stood there.
See? Nothing. Nothing.
Can we go now?
Rachel gapes. Angus draws a knife and stabs Sharon in the back. Sharon drops to the floor in front of a terrified Rachel. Angus approaches Rachel, who staggers back towards the door. Rachel flees, on Sharon's supine body bleeding profusely from the stab wounds. At the inn.
Legs 11? We have legs 11. But what about 1 and 6, suite 16? Ah, we'll no see that again, will we? The next number is 88, two fat ladies. Bingo, bingo! Oh, where's Finlay? Is he in here?
A breathless Rachel stumbles around the tables.
What? I need you to come with me right now.
What are you talking about?
Please, I need you to come with me.
Rachel, what are you doing?
Rachel drags hapless Finlay through the bingo throng. At the lighthouse, Finlay pushes the door open. The room leading to the staircase is empty, the floor clean.
Stabbed her right here.
So there'd be blood everywhere.
Oh, She was right here.
Oh, she's not here now. Come on, let's go.
She was here.
We need to do something. Get more police here.
I'm not taking anyone else out there.
I'm telling you, someone must have moved the body.
Rachel, I want you to listen to me. Angus McCulloch is dead. And I'll bet your friend is at home right now, reading the newspaper and eating scones.
Inside the cottage. Rachel grabs her mobile from her shoulder bag and dials frantically.
Hi, it's Sharon. Leave a message after the beep.
She's not there.
Yes, but that doesn't mean she came up here. Wherever she is, I'm sure she's absolutely fine. I want you to spend tonight with Mary and me. I don't think you should be alone.
What do you think? I'm making this up?
Nobody's out to get you. Listen, if this was one of your books, which would you believe? That the heroine fell in love with a ghost who then murdered her best friend? Or that she imagined it and she needs some help?
I'm not crazy.
Well, the offer's there. I'm at the other end of the phone.
Hi, it's Sharon. Leave a message after the beep.
Hi, it's me. I don't know where you are. I don't know if you came out here. I don't know what's going on, but if you could call me when you get this. Okay.
Hi, it's Sharon. Leave a message after. Hi, it's Sharon. Leave a message after. Leave a message after the beep. Leave a message.
Rachel bites her nails to the quick.
Dr. Friedman, table for four.
This way, sir.
Hello?
Robert?
Rachel, listen, I'm just in a restaurant. Can I call you back?
No. Listen, I don't know how to explain this, but I think that Sharon
came out here and that she may have been hurt.
What? What are you talking about?
I need you to do me a favor, okay?
Rachel, slow down. What's happening?
I don't know what's happening. That's just it. Can you
please just go to Sharon's? She's not answering her phone or her cell.
What for?
I just need you to go there, okay? And then call me, okay?
Well, why wouldn't she be there?
Look, I just need you to go there and then call me.
Listen, Rachel, can't this wait? I've got friends here. We're about
to... No, please, can you just do this for me? Okay?
Okay. I'll go there and I'll call you.
Okay, I'm gonna be waiting.
All right, sorry about that. Thanks very much.
Robert takes a seat at the table. Rachel clutches the phone to her chest. A whirring noise distracts her. She turns. From a crack under the bedroom door, she spies Thomas's buggy. The buggy zips out into the room, on a trembling Rachel. Rachel reverses her car out rapidly. She hammers on a cottage door. Morag opens the door cautiously. On a dishevelled Rachel.
I need to talk to you. Come in.
The Scots call it the Hulach, second sight. It's been my ruin. You think the living are full of regrets? You ought to hear the dead endlessly lamenting. Never made up with my children. Ignored my parents. Never told anyone I love them.
This isn't some kind of game, is it? I mean, you just wouldn't make this up. My son drowned. I just want to know that you... that this isn't something you would take lightly.
He follows you everywhere. He's trying to warn you.
About what? What? Angus? What are you saying? Are you saying he's not dead?
Oh, he's dead. His ghost sat there wandering the island. Suicide's a forever trap between our world and the next. When I cross, I don't want anything on my conscience. Don't go back to the island. Leave Inganish Cove tonight. Your life's in danger. That's what Thomas has come back to tell you.
I have to go back to get Thomas's things.
We'll do it quickly.
Rachel nods. As she drives, she dials. In the restaurant...
Would you like some of mine?
Yeah, one sec. Hello?
Have you gone to Sharon's?
I called her, she's not answering.
What's this all about?
Rachel closes her eyes in anguish and shuts off the call.
Would you excuse me a sec? Are you awake?
Robert, what a surprise.
I'm sorry to call you so late. Do you have a second?
Yes. We're just doing a little late-night editing. What's going on?
Something strange is going on with Rachel. She's called me twice. She's going on about Sharon being hurt somehow. I mean, she's not making sense. I knew she shouldn't have gone out there by herself.
You don't think she's going to do anything stupid, do you?
The way she sounded, nothing would surprise me.
Christ. Yeah, I was worried about this. Well, listen, I'm going to call her now.
I think you should. And get Sharon to also.
Yes, of course. Of course. Thanks for calling.
Okay, tell me how it goes. I hope everything's okay.
Yes, I will.
Brian strolls towards a window and Rachel's typewriter in the Scottish cottage. He slips on a pair of gloves. He sits at the desk, studies the manuscript paper, then rips out the sheet of paper containing row upon row of A's. He takes a blank sheet and slots it onto the typewriter spool. At a railway station, a train chugs out of the platform. A figure sashays along the platform and opens the door to a waiting room. In the room, a smug Angus sprawls on a wooden bench.
Back from the dead.
Sharon glares. Sharon sits opposite Angus.
You look good for a corpse.
She smirks, delves into her bag and withdraws a bundle of cash wrapped in brown parcel paper. She shoves it over to Angus. Angus picks up the bundle and considers it.
Where's the rest of it?
You get it when we get it.
Well, my price just doubled.
4 million. Slightly more than you told me. Do you know what the funny thing about you and Brian is? You always talk about him. All the ways the two of you are going to enjoy the money. But Brian, he never talks about the money and he never talks about you. He always talks about her, her books, her success, her imagination. It's envy of her, isn't it, that brought you two together?
Sharon sneers. Angus sups his beer nonchalantly.
We both just want to be her.
The ghost has a heart. Is that why you were on the balcony? You were meant to be downstairs.
Tonight, I wasn't on the balcony. I was downstairs the whole time. And besides, You're the ones who have been improvising. What's with all the messages from her dead kid?
We never did that. Good idea, though, but we never did it.
How do you get your hands on the money?
I thought you were the guy who never asked. I do the job. They pay me. I go home. You did the job. So go home. You didn't fall for her, did you, Patrick? While you were pretending to fall for her. Your whole life may have just collapsed.
Sharon smirks and pouts. Patrick grimaces. She's a real piece of work.
Do you remember what I was doing when we first met?
Sharon glowers.
Yeah.
Her face twitches.
Might. I want the rest of the money. I won't tell you again.
Patrick locks eyes with Sharon. She scowls, flicks her hair and walks off.
Sharon?
She whips round and looks down her nose.
It was a pleasure killing you.
He smirks and raises his lager bottle in her direction. Alone, his face drops like a stone. On the station platform, Patrick flips through the newspaper cuttings and photos of Rachel and of the lighthouse murder and suicide. There are shots of Rachel mooring the motorboat at the lighthouse jetty and in the island graveyard. Finally, the article, touched on top, Rachel Carlson still heads bestseller list after 4 months. Patrick shoves the scrapbook in his shoulder bag as the train approaches. He observes the train as it draws near, the electricity crackling as it crosses the points. A flashback to the photo at the ruin. Patrick runs to grab the camera and throws the film over the wall.
All aboard! Sir!
On a pale-faced Patrick as he remembers the film. Instead of clambering on the train, he rushes away. At the cottage, Rachel races to the wardrobe and snatches up the plastic storage box. Her head swivels around when she hears a tapping on the kitchen window. Her breathing shallow, she carries the box through. The tapping continues. A terrified Rachel skulks in the corridor. She tiptoes through the cottage. She gently pushes open the kitchen door. The curtains are drawn as Rachel left them. She places a storage box on the dining table. The tapping at the kitchen window continues. She reaches for a knife on the kitchen sideboard. She creeps towards the window. She forces herself forward, knife ready in her hand. She totters to the curtain, stretches out her hand, scoops the curtain back, and a crow taps on the pane, then flies away. Rachel exhales, gathers her wits. She places a knife on the desk. Her attention turns to the typewriter. A new sheet of paper is gripped in the machine. She walks round and reads the message. Don't mourn me, gone to be with Angus, forgive me, R. A gloved hand with a rag in it smothers her face. She struggles in vain as Brian forces her to the floor. As Rachel passes out from the drug, her blurred vision registers Brian and Sharon staring down at her, on Rachel as she falls into a drug-induced sleep. There was the grass around the ruin. He spies the film and grabs it. He makes a beeline for the beach and the motorized dinghy. As he snatches the mooring rope and starts to haul the boat towards the sea, he hears Rachel's voice.
I love these.
He stops dead in his tracks.
Do you know the old Celtic legend about them? First, we have to bury it together. Together.
He heads towards the wooden stakes. He kneels in the sand and scoops out a hole at the place where they buried the mother-of-pearl shell. He plucks the shell out.
And then, if one of us ever returns, digs it up, then...
Then we were meant for each other?
Well, actually, I don't know because I just made it out.
He stares in anguish, wrestling with his conscience. He glances up at the lighthouse. The lights are flicking on and off. An amazed Patrick rises up slowly. He looks around. No one is there. And still the lighthouse lights switch on and off. He sprints in the direction of the lighthouse. When he enters, the lighthouse is in darkness. He tiptoes into the eerie shell. He gazes up at the spiral stairway.
Rachel.
He fixes on the hook. He touches it. The radio lights up. The play button clicks on. Patrick turns and walks slowly towards the haunting sound. A clicking as the chain and hook rise up. Patrick stares at the hook transfixed. The chain dangles and the hook swings. A loud thumping noise emanates out. Patrick flinches and looks up. His eyes shift to the stairwell. His face contorts in horror. He stands rooted to the spot. He backs away towards the kitchen entrance. He cowers and screams. In the Murray house, the television blares out a horror movie.
Just room for one more inside.
So... there was nothing at all out there on the island.
Nah, the girl must be crazy. She's got guests in the attic. I love this bit. It's great. This is where Hugo the Dummy comes alive.
Finley goes to answer the door. Morag is outside.
Finley, I need your help out on the island.
For God's sake.
Rachel's in danger. It might be too late already.
It's very late tonight. You come back in the morning.
Finley, please, I need your help. Please.
Finley. The last time she tried to warn us about something, we all ignored her.
And with three funerals the next Sunday.
At the lighthouse jetty, Sharon steers the motorized boat to the jetty. Rachel is slumped inside. Sharon flings the mooring rope out. Brian grasps hold of the anchor chain. He wraps the chain around Rachel's ankles.
Brian, wait.
Look, relax. Everything's gone perfectly.
He ties the chain tight.
Everyone thinks she's crazy. The whole village. Even her own shrink. She's in love with a ghost. She sees murders that don't happen. No one's going to blink an eye when she kills herself.
Brian touches Sharon's face with a gloved hand.
And her grieving husband inherits £4 million.
Brian bends over Rachel.
You thought I had no imagination.
He squeezes her face. Rachel's eyes flicker open, then roll closed. Brian takes a gate lock from his pocket. The ice cream cone charm swings.
Just in case she loses courage. Just in case she wants to save herself at the last moment.
He fastens a lock onto the chain.
She throws the key out of reach.
He grabs Rachel's legs and hands and maneuvers her over the side of the boat. Her legs trail in the water.
Throws the anchor overboard.
Wait!
What?
There's someone out there.
On the lighthouse, its lights flashing in the dark night. On Sharon and Brian gaping, their backs to the boat. In the boat, Rachel lifts her head.
Did you see Patrick get on the train?
No.
It's got to be him.
Rachel claws for the key.
What's he doing?
I don't know. We've gone too far to stop now.
The keys jangle as she tries to grip them. Sharon turns her head and spots her. Rachel and Sharon lock eyes. Rachel brushes the charm with her fingers.
Brian, she's awake.
Rachel grabs the key as Brian throws the anchor overboard. Sharon forces Rachel's arms down into the water. Rachel clings to the edge of the boat. Brian takes over and pushes Rachel down. The anchor plummets to the depths. Brian overcomes Rachel and she drops down with the anchor. Rachel sinks like a stone. She claws frantically. Brian watches her from the boat. Sharon stands over the side and gazes into the murky depths too.
Don't look.
She shoves Brian away.
Don't look.
Brian heaves her back from the boat's edge.
It's over. We've got to see about Patrick.
In the water, Rachel tugs at the chain around her ankles. She twists and pulls, but to no avail. She tries to swim upwards. The anchor holds her back. She ceases struggling and floats in the water. Tiny air bubbles issue from her nose. She opens her eyes and swivels in the water. The key, still attached to the ice cream cone charm, floats down in front of her. She grabs it. Rachel surfaces, gasping for air. She swims to the boat. She opens the locker and retrieves a gun and a length of rope. Meanwhile, in the lighthouse,
he's not here.
This place gives me the creeps. What if Patrick was telling the truth? What if he wasn't on the balcony? Remember all those sailors who said they saw Angus's ghost on the island?
Yeah. Drunk Scotch sailors. Very reliable. He's not here. Let's go.
Rachel charges him and hits him hard with the gun butt.
Start tying yourself up.
Sharon rushes at Rachel, who is pointing the gun at Brian. They tussle and the gun goes off. It causes a blaze to start on the kitchen side. Brian scrambles to his feet and tackles Rachel. He shoves Sharon aside, who falls and hits her head on the piping. Rachel hammers Brian with the gun butt. She drags herself away. Brian claws at her ankles. Brian glances at Sharon. She is dead. Rachel drops the gun and stumbles to the stairs.
This isn't one of your stories, Rachel.
Rachel hauls herself up the stairs.
It's not going to be a happy ending.
She heaves open the door to the balcony. Brian follows. He hears the chain clicking. The hook lowers down. Brian watches, mesmerized. From out of the dark, a sodden figure descends the steps. Brian gapes, boggle-eyed.
Patrick. No. No, Patrick.
Patrick snatches a hook. He squelches towards Brian, the hook in his hand. He thrusts the hook into Brian's midriff. Outside, Finley approaches a lighthouse. He peers in through the kitchen window and gasps. Up on the balcony. Patrick walks through the door and towards a terrified Rachel. She retreats into the shadows. Patrick trudges towards her. A guilt-ridden Patrick studies Rachel's face. He gently presses an object into her open palm. The mother of pearl shell. Their eyes meet. Patrick hurls himself over the railing onto the rocks below. Rachel, struck rigid with horror, staggers back from the railing. She pads gingerly back into the stairwell. The shot widens to reveal Brian, the hook in his body, hanging from the centre of the stairwell. Finley gazes up at him from the ground floor. Rachel sinks to her knees. She gapes at the scene before her. A tear trickles down her cheek. A headline in a newspaper. Murder plot foiled. Conspirators turn on each other. A byline declares Rachel Carlson not involved. Rachel studies the paper. The sea pounds against the shore and the wind rages. Finlay approaches carrying Rachel's suitcase.
It's better this way, you know.
Thank you.
We'll keep people off the island. Maybe then Angus can rest in peace. You ready?
Rachel nods. Rachel clutches the paper to her chest. Morag passes Finlay on the porch.
Do you know what Thomas would have wanted? Let go of his death. Remember his life.
Morag and Rachel hug. Rachel climbs in her car. Finlay and Morag watch her leave. A parting shot of the lighthouse on the outcrop. Thank you. at Rachel's home in London. Rachel steps into her backyard and squeezes past the tree. She stares across the boardwalk and towards the bench on the decking. She sees an image of her son sitting there. She pulls back the bar and opens the unlocked wrought iron gate. She strolls across the boardwalk. She traverses the decking to the bench. She reclines on the bench and looks up to the heavens. The view widens to encompass the canal, the greenery, the adjoining houses, and the world beyond.